When Arthur is 10 years old, his father tells him he is a soldier. "We are at war, son, and the hardest part is that the enemy hides in plain sight, fooling the common people, passing themselves off as decent members of society, spreading their poison to everything they touch." Uther tells him that he's old enough now to know the truth. Magic killed his mother. If he doesn't join the fight, it will kill him too. He has to toughen up, body and mind, in preparation for the war that's coming. The war to stop the magicals from infiltrating their society, from threatening everything they hold dear. The war to make sure innocents like his mother never suffer again. Arthur listens. He grows up tall and strong because anything else would be unthinkable. He trains his body like a soldier, up every morning at 6 a.m., push-ups, sit-ups, half-hour run. His father shows him how at first. Later, he trusts him to do it himself. He learns to cook at age 13, when Uther starts spending more time away from home. Healthy food only, perfectly measured portions of protein and vegetables, lots of brown rice, lots of chicken. Uther doesn't allow chocolate or crisps in the house, or fizzy drinks, or fast food, or sugary cereals. Even when Arthur turns 18, he's expected not to drink alcohol. There's a long list of things that Uther believes to be distractions from the cause, and Arthur tries to learn them all as best he can. In physical terms, he's as fit as any soldier. Mentally, he's a failure. As a child, he remembers Uther reading to him before bed, and all the stories being about the dangers of magic in one way or another. When he gets older, Uther replaces the storybooks in his room with textbooks, the kind that have graphs and charts and statistical evidence to show that magicals are less intelligent, less empathetic, more prone to violent crime. The documentaries Uther makes him watch in the evenings tend to reach the same conclusion. They're mostly old, though, the quality blurry, because, as Uther puts it, the liberal media is too cowardly to make shows that tell the truth anymore. The action films they watch are dated too, relics from a bygone era when it was perfectly acceptable to portray magicals as hooded-eyed, long-fingered sadists who lure innocent women and children to their evil lairs before the hero bursts in to save the day. The genre was mostly played out by the 1970s, which is another thing that Uther blames on political correctness gone mad. Arthur doesn't mind the books or the documentaries, and he quite likes the action films. It's the other films he can't stomach. The videos that Uther brings home in plain cardboard cases and stores neatly in the hidden room in the basement. Videos that show magicals fighting in vicious underground cage matches, owned and controlled by red-faced managers who scream violent encouragement from the sidelines. Videos filmed on shaky cameras that show magicals being accosted on the street, knocked to the ground, kicked from all sides until their faces collapse in a horrible mess of flesh and bone. Videos of mock trials where magicals are tied to chairs and made to account for their various crimes before being sentenced to brutal and humiliating punishments by a jeering mob. Arthur never knows where his father gets these videos from. All he knows is that they make him physically ill. He has nightmares about them, waking up in a cold sweat after dreams in which he's the magical and they hunt him down instead. But Uther can never know his weakness, so he locks his horror up inside. He sits in front of the television, nails stuck so far into his hands that they occasionally bleed, praying that his face isn't giving him away. His father figures it out eventually, figures out that while Arthur might have trained himself to be the perfect physical specimen for the war on magic, his mind is sadly unfit for the task at hand. He hides it as best he can, but Uther sniffs it out. His father doesn't give up on him, not right away. That comes later. At first, Uther seems convinced he can bring Arthur around to the right path. Arthur's set to inherit the family business, Arkstone. Officially, it's a conglomerate dedicated to research into magical affairs. Unofficially, Arkstone is dedicated to detecting and eliminating the magical threat in British society. A company like that needs a committed leader, and so his father tries every method he can think of to awaken the kind of fervor inside his son that will remove any doubts about the anti-magical crusade. until one of his methods almost gets Arthur killed. Arthur doesn't remember that much about the night he nearly dies. The first part is clear enough, but after the spell hits, it's all fragmented pieces. His recollections are blurry, out of focus. He has little details, but not the full picture. He remembers Uther sitting him down in the morning and telling him that they were going somewhere special that night. That usually only adults went, but he was taking Arthur because he knew his son was mature enough to handle it. Arthur remembers basking in the praise. It came along so rarely in this house. He's excited all day, rushing around the house, getting all of his chores done so he'd be ready to leave. Uther takes a jeep, which is unusual, but it turns out to be quite a drive to the destination. The terrain gets bumpy about half an hour in, and Arthur realizes they're leaving the city. He wants to ask more questions, but Uther doesn't like that, so he stays quiet and stares out of the window. When the car finally slows, Arthur looks out to see a gigantic, disused warehouse. It's clearly been abandoned for quite some time. Several windows are smashed and the signs are long faded. When they walk up to the entrance, a burly man is standing guard.
"All right, Pendragon,"
he grunts. "Myror," Uther nods. The man turns his gaze on Arthur.
"What's this? Take your daughter to work day. Isn't he a little young?"
Arthur glares up at him. He's 15. He's not a child.
"He's old enough," Uther says coldly. "If you'll excuse us."
He pushes past the man and Arthur follows, ignoring the smirk that this Myror sends his way. It's dark inside the warehouse, and it takes a second for Arthur's eyes to adjust. He sees a crowd of people huddled in one area of the warehouse, in a rough kind of circle. They seem to be staring at something in their midst, but Arthur can't see through the throng to spot what it is. He's craning his neck when Uther grabs his shoulder, spinning him round to face him.
"Stick close to me," he warns. "I don't want you wandering off."
Arthur nods.
What are they all looking at?"
His father's face splits into a slightly feral grin.
"Come and see."
He follows his father to the outskirts of the circle, where Uther taps a bald man on the shoulder.
"Uther, good to see you."
"Brought a boy with me,"
his father says, jerking his thumb in Arthur's direction.
"Any chance we can get him a better view?"
"No problem," the bald man says, and he effortlessly cuts a path through the people in front of him. They grumble a bit, but he must have some authority in this area, because no one objects. He feels his father's hand at his back, pushing him forward through the newly created space. It's stiflingly hot the closer he gets to the center, and when he finally makes it to the front, the sight that greets him is anticlimactic. It's just a few men milling around, some chatting with each other, one clutching a hold-all bag that appears to be full of loose banknotes. He looks quizzically at his father, who checks his watch.
"Shouldn't be long now."
"What shouldn't be long now?"
Arthur asks, but Uther just grins in that same strange way.
10 minutes later, Arthur gets his answer. A roar suddenly goes up among the crowd as there's some movement in the back of the warehouse. The circle parts across from him, and suddenly 4 men are walking into the ring. That's not technically correct. 2 men are walking, and the other 2 are being led on chains. The bottom drops out of Arthur's stomach, and his whole body chills, despite the heat of the warehouse.
The men on chairs aren't being dragged. It's not like in some of the videos Uther's made him watch, where captured magicals get punished in front of screaming crowds. The men aren't being restrained so they won't escape. They're being restrained so they won't tear each other apart. They're pulling against chains around their necks, eyes wild and rolling, sweat pouring down their faces, both shirtless. One of them seems to be drooling slightly, and the other's twitching and shaking. They're clearly drugged. Arthur doesn't know with what, but he's heard about drugs that can mess with a magical's nervous system, concoctions that keep them compliant or docile, or, in this case, ready to fight. The 2 men are taken to opposite sides of the makeshift ring, growling and snapping at one another across the space. The man with the hold-all full of banknotes steps forward.
"Ladies and gentlemen, you've had plenty of time to place your bets. The show is about to begin.
In the blue corner, we have Torin, our reigning champion, just as mean and hungry as he always is. And in the red corner, our challenger, Alvar, all the way from Donegal and itching to take home the prize. The one the man names as Torin bares his teeth. He's taller than his competitor and better built too. Alvar is slighter, wirier. He's the one who can't stop twitching. Every so often he flicks at the back of his head like he's trying to knock a fly away. Arthur wants to leave. He wants to go right now and never find out what happens next. But Uther is right behind him and Arthur would never be forgiven. Clearly his father wants him to witness this for whatever reason. He's been deemed mature enough. He can't let Uther down now. So he grits his teeth and stares straight ahead, trying not to look too closely at either magical as the minders unhook the chains from round their necks.
Are you ready?
The whole old man roars and the crowd screams in reply.
3, 2, 1, fight!
The magicals are suddenly shoved into the center of the ring, straight for each other. Arthur expects magic to be used straight away, but Torin's first move is purely physical. He sinks his fist into Alvar's chest, and Alvar falls backwards, the force of the blow knocking him off his feet. Torin moves to deliver a kick, but suddenly Alvar's eyes flash and Torin reels, 4 ugly scratch marks appearing on his ribcage. He stumbles for a second, then his own eyes flash, and Arthur winces to see Alvar's head bang hard against the concrete floor, as if of its own accord. The fight begins in earnest then. Arthur shuts his eyes for much of it, praying that Uther can't see him, but he's honestly worried he'll throw up if he has to watch it all, the way the men are ripping each other apart without even laying a finger on each other. The crowd lets out a particularly rowdy cheer, and Arthur opens his eyes to see Alvar's eyes bulging, his face slowly turning red like he's being strangled. Arthur's never seen a fight like this before, but surely Alvar's about to pass out. He's been on the back ropes the whole time, and a body can only take so much. Then, unbelievably, Alvar breaks free from the strangulation spell. He sucks in the air, while Torin watches in amusement, seemingly ready to strike the final blow. But then Alvar's eyes flash once again, and the crowd turns expectantly to Torin to see nothing. No new marks, no wound inflicted. Then, Torin lets out a terrible noise, a sort of guttering, choking sound. His body convulses and he drops to his knees as blood starts to pour from his mouth. Arthur can only watch in horror as Torin spasms, more and more blood coming up from his throat. He wants to scream at Alvar to stop it, but there's nothing anyone can do now, and they all watch as Torin keens, body twisting desperately, before finally collapsing face down on the ground. He does not move again. There is a tiny pause.
Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for our new champion, Alvar Jones!
The mob around Arthur goes wild, chanting and whooping as Hold All Man lifts Alvar's arm in the air in triumph. Alvar can hardly stand. His twitching has intensified to the point where his whole body is strung tight as a bow, but he manages a hazy sort of nod to the crowd.
The prize fight might be over, but we have plenty more entertainment for you tonight, so stick around, the man announces happily.
Arthur has had enough. He can't stay a second longer. He turns to his father.
Dad, can I go wait in the car?
Uther glares at him.
The next fight will be starting soon, he says, displeasure clear in his voice.
I know, I just... Please, Dad,
Arthur begs.
Uther looks vaguely disgusted.
Fine. Feel free to come back in if you grow a pair, he says coldly.
Arthur flinches. Uther hands the keys over silently and Arthur bolts. There's no one guarding the entrance as he flees, and he's grateful for that because he throws up almost the second he leaves the warehouse. When he's finished retching, he shuffles over to the jeep and climbs into the back seat. He presses his head against the cool leather of the headdress and tries to calm down.
Was Torin dead? Arthur didn't know for sure. He could just be unconscious.
Surely they wouldn't let them kill each other. Someone would find out, and the police would have to get involved. A blind eye couldn't be turned to actual murder, could it? He shuts his eyes, but images of the fight replay in his mind like some kind of sick film that he can't turn off. Why would his father go to something like this? Did he enjoy it? Did he think Arthur would? He doesn't know how long he stays like that, but eventually he must doze off, because he jerks awake when the car door opens and someone slides into the back seat next to him. "Dad," he says sleepily, "can we go now?"
"Give me the keys, kid,"
an unfamiliar voice says, and Arthur's eyes fly open. It's Alvar, still bloodied and battered from the fight, sweat-soaked and stained.
"You're not supposed to be here,"
Arthur says, mouth so dry he can barely force the words out. Alvar laughs, showing a glimpse of sharp yellow teeth.
"No, you got it in one, kid. I'm not supposed to be here. That's why I'm getting out, and this car's the way I'm doing it. So give me the keys."
Arthur doesn't know what perverse part of him makes him tighten his hands around the keys. It's probably the part that tells him he already disappointed Uther once tonight, and if he just gives up their jeep to some insane magical... Where is his father?
"Come on,"
Alvar says, and he sounds more desperate now.
"Don't make me hurt you."
Arthur's fingers clutch the keys harder, even as panic rises in his throat.
"My dad will be back any minute," he says shakily.
Alvar explodes.
"For fuck's sake!"
He lunges for Arthur, pinning him to the seat and grabbing at his hands.
"No! No! Dad! Dad!"
Arthur shouts, and just as Alvar's painful squeeze on his wrist makes him drop the keys on the car floor, the door behind Alvar is ripped open.
"Get the hell away from my son,"
Uther says, and Arthur sobs in relief. Uther's got the bald man behind him, but Alvar reacts quicker than either of them expect. He kicks open the opposite door and then jumps out before dragging Arthur with him, holding him against his body.
"You try anything and he dies,"
he yells as Uther runs round to their side of the car.
"I can tear him apart from the inside. You know I can."
Uther turns murderous eyes on the bald man next to him.
"How is he doing this? I thought you were keeping him under control." "I don't know," the man whines. "He must have found a way to flush the drugs out his system."
Arthur whimpers, feeling Alvar's arm tighten around his neck as he shifts his hold on him. He can feel the sweat from the other man's heated body seeping through his t-shirt, the tickle of his erratic breaths on his face.
"Help me,"
he begs, and Uther takes a step forward.
"Don't fucking move,"
Alvar screams.
"I will stretch him into little pieces."
But Arthur sees that Uther's gaze is looking beyond them, and he only has a second to worry why before the grip holding him in place suddenly slackens, and he feels Alvar crumple to the ground behind him. He turns to see Myra standing there, brick still in his hand.
"I told you he was too young,"
he says grimly to Uther, and for once his father has no reply. Arthur runs across to his father, only turning back when he's at a safe distance. Alvar's on the ground, groaning, barely conscious. The bald man steps forward, a bag of white powder in his hand.
"Help me get this down his throat,"
he says to Myra, who nods and holds Alvar into a sitting position. Arthur can see the exact moment it happens. Alvar's eyes focus a little, and he sees the bag of powder dangling in front of him. What happens next seems like a primal, instinctive reaction. Alvar's eyes flash, and both Myra and the bald man are sent careening backwards, smashing down into the hard concrete. Then Alvar raises his hand and points it straight at Uther, his lips forming the words of a new spell. With only a split second to think about it, Arthur realizes the man intends to do more damage than just knocking Uther out. He doesn't have time to consciously make a decision. All he has time to do is step in front of his father. Then the spell hits him.